From the boardroom to the locker room, sport captures the imagination like little else. In this podcast, we talk to the men and women who make the big decisions and those who make the big plays to find out where sport is and, importantly, where it's going. But we do so through the only eyes that matter, those of the fan.
And a very warm welcome aboard the pirate ship at the Reeve Gauche and to the Captain's Table podcast, brought to you by Are You Not Entertained and our great friends at Loch Lomond Whiskies. I'm Giles Morgan. I'm not actually a captain, or indeed a pirate, but a vague ancestor of my family, Captain Henry Morgan, actually was one, and his family all came from Wales as well. For 30 years, I have been lucky enough to travel all over the world as a boring old marketing suit in the sports industry, which included having arguably the best job in the world as head of sponsorship at HSBC. Along that journey, I got to rub shoulders with the good, the bad, and the ugly from the world of sport. And having ditched the pinstripe suit for breeches and the red waistcoat and cutlass that befits a pirate captain, I set out to create this podcast where every fortnight I simply ask my special guests from the world of sport to share their own personal memories of being a sports fan and how that passion has affected and shaped their lives. Oh, welcome back, everybody, to the timbered home of my parrot, John the Parrot, the ship's dog, Bruce, my limp steward, Paul, and of course me, Captain Morgan. Since we last all met, I've been to Mustique with the very nice Tim Henman, but I had to bring my budgie smugglers back and get back to business because we're joined for this show with golfing royalty, with Dame Laura Davis. Really the ultimate sports all-rounder, not only one of the greatest golfers Britain has ever produced with 87 professional wins, 20 on the LPGA, but a very handy five-a-side footballer, cricketer, tennis player, you name it, Laura can absolutely smash it. She was made Dame Commander of the British Empire in 2014, the ultimate honour for any woman in the UK, and inducted into the World Hall of Golf in 2015. So she is as decorated a sports person as we have, and it's absolute joy to have her on the Reeve Gauche. And a very warm welcome on board to Dame Laura Davis, and welcome to the Captain's Table podcast. Pull up a chair and make yourself at home.
Aye, aye, skipper.
Oh, good on you. Well, and good news is, Laura, is that your bags, unfortunately you didn't bring your golf bag, so thanks for that, are going to be taken to your cabin by the slightly dodgery steward, Paul. He does look, as I say, a bit unsteady on his feet, but he is actually as fit as a fiddle. But I wouldn't leave your valuables in the cabin, because once you're a pirate, you're always a pirate. Beware as you sit down when you made yourself at home for the parrot, John, and the ship's dog, Bruce, who looks cute, but it's the right menace. So just be careful. And the first thing, now that you've sat down, you're sitting comfortably, is I need to get you a drink. But being that this is a pirate ship and we have rum on board, as you'd expect, but this is the classiest ship in the seven seas. And so we always take the high road. And our drink of choice for our guests, as you'd expect, is Loch Lomond Scotch single malt whiskey as opposed to rum. And we can offer it to you straight, on the rocks, mixed, as an old-fashioned, or however you like. How would you like your Loch Lomond whiskey?
I think we'll go on the rocks, try something new.
Very good. And do you may be a whiskey aficionado already. Do you like that peated or unpeated?
I haven't got a clue what that means, so I'm going to go peated.
Go peated. We'll sort Paul out. He'll bring you a drink. It'll be delicious. Now, enough of this absolute nonsense on my metaphorical pirate ship. Laura, you've been part of the British sporting royalty for many, many years. And I also know from the time we've spent together that what some people may not know is you're a big sports fan. And I know you're big into your footy in particular, but do you remember, as a fan, as a young girl growing up, what your earliest sporting memory was being taken to sport?
I think the first time I remember was going to Upton Park. My brother, older brother Tony, was is a big West Ham fan. And we went to Upton Park every sort of other week, I think, because obviously West Ham playing at home. And that's what I remember, the days of Clyde Best, Trevor Brooking. So we're talking a long, long time ago. I was very young, but I have fond memories. And obviously that ground's not there anymore, but I have fond memories of walking up to the ground years and years ago.
And are you still a fan? Is that your club?
No, I'm a Liverpool fan, luckily. It was my brother that was West Ham, and I had to be different to my brother. And Liverpool lost that FA Cup final in 71 to Arsenal. And I felt sorry for them, and they wore red. I was 7 years old, so what are you going to do? That was my team from then on.
And is that the reason? That was it was a feeling of sorrow for them, and you wanted them, and you liked the colour?
Yeah, I just love red at the time, and still do love red. It's red numbers in golf, isn't it? But that was me hooked on Liverpool. And at the time, I didn't have a clue they were one of the best teams in the world. But obviously, it was a good mistake.
Well, you picked well. Then the sort of the 70s and 80s went quite well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it was glory days and slowed down a bit, but we're back on top now.
You must love it right now. I was going to say, that must be an amazing feeling to have seen Liverpool get back to the past glories.
Oh, it's incredible. As soon as Jürgen, I think a lot of the managers did really well, but never quite had could never quite put together the squad that could win the Premier League. And I was reminded of it by many of my friends. We'd never won the Premier League, although we'd won 18 other titles. Now Jürgen came in, and all of a sudden he set up that Van Dijk and Alisson in goal and unbelievable front three. And it appears now we've got the makings of not a team that can dominate, because I don't think you can dominate the Premier League anymore, but a team that can be up there every year for a long time.
And when you think back of Tony taking you to West Ham those years ago, did you then, at what point did golf sort of take over in you as a girl growing up into a young woman, as someone who became one of our top sportswomen? Were you able to keep that football fandom thing going, or cricket or other sports, and go as a fan? I'm sure you played a lot as well. How did you kind of mix your ability to play sport as well as sort of support sport?
Well, that was a great thing, because of what I ended up doing as a profession. I got to go to all sorts of sporting arenas around the world. And certainly when I was younger, we used to go, and anytime Liverpool came to London, Mum and stepdad Mike would take us to the ground so I could watch a bit of Liverpool as well. I've always had time for live sport, because for me, it's the ultimate. You see a lot on TV, and I love sport on TV, obviously, but actually being there and soaking up the atmosphere. I mean, I've been to Atlanta Braves games. I've been to Chicago Bears games over in America. I just, any live sport I get a chance to go to, I'll always grab it.
And that's happened during your playing career, which has spanned quite a while. Have you been able to dip your toe into the American sports and the sports in Asia and Europe and et cetera? And that's something that you've genuinely tried to do?
Oh, very much so. Yeah, the one thing I really wanted to do, I used to spend a lot of time in Japan, was to go to a sumo wrestling tournament. Never, I saw it. It was in the afternoons, obviously in the evening, sorry, on the weekend when the sumo's on. It's hard to get there because we've been playing golf, but I watched so much of it. I really wanted to go. So hopefully one day I'll get a chance to go and watch that, because that's one of the few sports I haven't seen live. And that's just something I remember all those years ago when I was in Japan.
I think the privilege of being an international sports person, as you have been, is the invitations. And I even saw it a little bit in my old career working in sponsorship, is the chance to be on a circus where you can then go and see cricket or tennis or all of the other things is extraordinary. Who were your, obviously Liverpool, but with football, but who were your earliest sporting heroes in any sport? I mean, was it golfers? Was it tennis players, footy players? Who were your idols growing up?
Well, it was a bit of a mishmash, really. Obviously, Liverpool, Kevin Keegan springs to mind, Kenny Dalglish. But I used to love Ian Botham. I like the flamboyant, you know, the ones that got the job done in not just the normal way. So Ian Botham, yeah, absolutely brilliant. And Alex Higgins, as crazy as he turned out to be, it was great fun watching him play snooker. Eric Bristow in the darts. I think as a young person, you tend to just go for the absolute leaders of those sports at the time. And I guess I got caught up in that. But yeah, there's nothing better than a Freddie Flintoff type character that does it just a little bit different. That's always attracted me. Seve springs to mind.
Well, I was going to say, with golfers then, was it the flamboyant, you know, the Trevinos of this world, the Seves, the people that you leaned into as well because of that flair that they had as people, as well as obviously magicians on the course?
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, Seve was my absolute sporting hero and still is to this day. I still, any time there's a documentary on him or, you know, reruns of things that he's done in the past, it's something I'll always watch because there was just something about the guy. He was just amazing. I was lucky enough to meet him and play with him a few times.
I was going to ask, what was he like?
Oh, he was amazing. He was great with his tie. I played a TV match with him in Japan and it was just lovely. He was my partner. I mean, how about that? You get to play alongside against I've forgotten who the two Japanese were, maybe Okamoto and one of the guys. But yeah, just to be his partner out on the fairways was amazing. And he was very generous with his time. And because my game, I don't say my game's like Seve's, but I try and base it like that with all feel touch. He showed me a few shots. A very generous man.
And do you think that, I mean, he is revered as one of the great great golfers, one of the great characters of the sport, and so instrumental in Ryder Cup and the changing of Ryder Cup. Was he as good, and I say this from a golfer to a golfer, was he as good in terms of his shot creation as people say he was? Did you see that this guy had something that very, very few people have ever had?
Yeah, I think the only one that comes close to him, in my view, that I've ever seen is Tiger, with his imagination and his short game. Seve, the best shot I ever saw Seve hit wasn't on the course. It was in I was commentating for the BBC alongside him and a few others. And we were in the porter cabin, the green room, between when we were doing our little commentary bit. And he took a sand wedge out and hit a pitch with this sand wedge and held it on a stool. There was no back to it. He just hit it up, checked it up, and it stopped it in the middle. And there was Sam Torrance in the room, and I think Ken Brown or Mark James, other commentators that week. And we all just looked at it. We all tried to do it all week. No one could hit that shot. And it just sticks out in my mind. It was amazing.
And going back to your you know, you've travelled all over the world with your golf, and then you've gone to Stadia and loved all of that as a fan. What's, of all the places you've been to, what's your favourite stadium of all? If you could only go to one more stadium, where is it and what would you watch?
Well, I hate to say it, but probably one of the nicest stadiums I've ever been to is the Emirates Stadium. And I hate Arsenal, so I shouldn't really say that. But it is the most magnificent stadium. But I think all these new stadiums now, obviously, I've never been to Twickenham, incredibly, which I think would be one of the best ones. I was very impressed at the Millennium Stadium, Cardiff, when I went there. Obviously, for me, Anfield is one of the finest. But yeah, I'd say for... just the overall, I mean, the atmosphere, I was with the Liverpool away fans, so the atmosphere was great. For the home fans, it's never quite that good.
Do you sing the fan songs? Are you giving it welly?
I mean, if they're going, I'm going right there with them. Yeah, no, I love it. I get carried away. I watch every Liverpool game because I'm just obsessed with them.
And I think I know the answer, therefore, to this question, but some people enjoy watching sport from the comfort of their own home, you know, on the sofa with the big 48-inch screen and whatever. Some people like going down the pub and being with mates and getting that kind of atmosphere, but with the TV. And others just like the live experience. I mean, I know it's difficult to choose, but if you had the choice, would you always go live and be there?
Oh, absolutely. There's nothing quite like it. I've been to two World Cups to watch England play, travelled over to Germany and France for the two that any time I could get there, I would get there. So yeah, there's no question that, I mean, it's a long journey sometimes, but it's just worth it to soak up the atmosphere.
Which has been therefore so interesting in this COVID era that we've been living through, of trying to watch live sports. Some sports that I don't think, funny enough, your sport, it doesn't, of course the galleries can make a difference, but what people are doing on the fairways is largely what they're doing on the fairways. But in sports like football, particularly how players seem to react to adulation from the live experience, there is something a little bit missing at the moment.
No question. Yeah, I think if you look at the stats, the away teams have won a lot more games than normal. So there's obviously something to it. It's now just best team against best team rather than the home advantage has obviously gone out the window. So there's no question that the fans are so important to all sports. Like you said, we get away with it a little bit at golf because they're not rooting necessarily for, well, Tiger. I guess if Tiger's playing, the gallery's all rooting for Tiger. But it's normally just an enjoyment of the game at golf, whereas it's tribal with rugby and cricket and football. When it's a team event, it's more tribal. Well, it's like the Ryder Cup and the Solheim Cup. It then becomes a bit more tribal.
And when you've been watching your beloved Liverpool or anything else, England rugby, have you ever cried? Do you cry as a fan? Do you get well up? Are you a softie?
Not with the success. I take the success and I've got a big grin on my face. So some defeats I've taken quite heavily. And England, when we lost to Argentina in the World Cup in those horrible circumstances, you know, with the, when the Campbell goal should have counted, that was the hardest I think I was ever hit, apart from the game against Germany when we lost on penalties, when poor old Chris Waddle put it over the bar. That was a hard one to take.
And just imagine for a moment is that I've got our friends at the Rugby Football Union, and they've, when obviously people are allowed back to watch live sport, and they've said, Dame Laura Davis and Giles Morgan, we're going to Twickenham together and we're going to watch England and I Sport Wales, as you probably remember, but I'll get over it. There's a reason for this question. So we're going there, you haven't been to Twickenham, it's all very exciting. And I say to you at half time, and this doesn't often happen, so you'd enjoy the moment, Laura, I'm going to get a couple of pints, but I'm also going to get some food from one of the vans outside. What is the Laura Davis kind of sin stadium food that you go, oh, go on, get me whatever? What would that be?
Well, if ever there's a hog roast, I'm in. You can count me in. I do love the old crunchy
bit of apple
crackling.
Sauce and a bit of apple sauce.
No apple sauce, not for me.
Mustard?
No, yeah, I can do mustard. Mustard's okay.
All right. That's very good. Well, you never know, the RFU might be listening. Yeah. I'll make sure they do, and then we'll see what we can do. And do you have a favourite sort of fan song or anthem or something that you, I mean, Liverpool or whatever, but is there something you love just belting out? Sorry, there's Bruce, the dog. He's after your, he's probably in your suitcase already. Now,
I think he is. Well, the anthem for me is You Never Walk Alone. So that's the one. And obviously listening to the national anthem when England are playing at anything, cricket, rugby, football, that's always a lovely, I always pay attention and I'm very quiet when that's on. So yeah, it's just traditional things I like, really.
Oh, well, I can't wait. We'll see if we can go, because I love a sing-song, and any chance. Now, as I said earlier, Loch Lomond Whiskies are the spirit of the Open Golf Championship, and I believe also sponsor the Women's Open as well, which is fantastic. And I do want to ask you a few questions about golf, because they like to know. And what is your favourite moment, your Open moment, as a player? Yours in particular, of the, how many Opens have you played, Women's Opens?
I just played my 40th straight Women's Open.
40th straight.
Yeah.
And is there a moment in your amazing career, and I'm not here to blow smoke up about your amazing career, but it was amazing. Is there a moment at the Open you go, I will treasure that till, you know, in my dotage?
I think it wasn't during the actual tournament itself. It was I managed to get first off in a practice round. And me and my caddy walked to the first tee. We had St Andrews to ourselves. We played in 2.5 hours in perfect conditions. And I'll always say I missed the cut that week. I mean, the weather turned on me. But that particular Wednesday morning when we were first out, and St Andrews to ourselves playing those 18 holes, I think's the finest round of golf I've ever played. And it was a practice round. So that's just what St Andrews does for you.
And I think that the magic of golf, and I'm well known to be the worst golfer ever in professional golf as an amateur, and I'm very proud of that fact. But I think there is something about St Andrews that puts, whether you're you or whether you're me, standing either on the first or on the 18th, knowing that everybody in golf who's been anybody has stood on that same tee box and looked out in exactly the same way. It's very unique in sport, that, isn't it? That particularly an Open at St Andrews is like nothing else in the sport.
Yeah, I think it's, you asked earlier about the big, best stadium in the world, and it's probably St Andrews. It's a massive stadium, but when you walk up 18 and down one, that little amphitheatre that you get, you don't need anyone there. It's just the buildings, the creek, the bridge. That might be my favourite stadium.
Well, it would be mine, and I'll tell you my favourite golf story, which is, it won't surprise you because you've seen me play golf, is that in the HSBC days years ago, they had Tom Watson was there as an ambassador, and he stood on the 18th tee box, and I came through, and I had my my pairings with me, and I hit a drive which was leaking right and high, which is something that I'm prone to do. And he went, "Oh, good shot, good connection," but he looked a little aghast. But what was awful was that Peter Dawson, the then head of the RNA, was standing next to me, and he said, "I think you're going to hit the Roostacks Hotel." Well, I didn't, but when we walked up to the fairway, there one of the cars parked outside was what you might say a little bit splintered in the windscreen department. So I did that in front of Peter and Tom Watson, and I've never, ever been that to forget it. Anyway, enough of that. You said earlier, playing golf, you played golf with Severiano Ballesteros, which must be amazing. Have you played with other heroes of yours, either from the world of sport or from other, where you've almost been overawed by the experience? You're the golfer, but you're playing golf with someone that's, I can't believe I'm doing this.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many. I mean, if you want to talk golfers, I once played a stroke play event with Arnold Palmer, and that took me to the brink of not being able to take the club back. That's how nervous I was, and that's how he made me, just being there, just thinking that Arnold Palmer, you're in the same group as him. But then I played with Ian Botham in a pro-am years, and Ian, my rookie year on the tour, probably in 1985. So that's how long ago that was. And that was a great moment. NFL footballers I've played with Michael Jordan, of all people, played a little
wow.
five-hole shootout with him at one of the US Opens in Chicago Country Club.
He's massively keen on golf, isn't he?
Oh, he loves it. And he's a good player too. I mean, he's very, very good. He was still playing NBA at the time, so he wasn't quite as dedicated as he is now. But people like that, it's incredible that I've had the chance to play with him. There's too many to mention. Jim McMahon, the Chicago Bears quarterback, fantastic. Amazing. Really good player as well.
And also, I would imagine, because you're the golfer and because they're there, you know, is that whilst you might be nervous meeting those people, at the same time, it's in your backyard, so that the conversation, they're probably quite nervous too, is what I mean, because they've got to try and hit the ball straight and you're the pro. So it probably is quite a good way of sort of getting everybody to a level, I would imagine.
I think so. And then that's why, obviously, you walk the fairways with them and you're just chatting about what they do, and they're watching your game, because a lot of them are very good, but they can always still learn a little bit. So, yeah, it's just a lovely way to interact and play a pro-am.
And talking of pro-ams, if I made you captain of a pro-am team, and you could pick three people to play with, and they don't have to be golfers, they can be alive or dead, but who would be the Laura Day? Who would be on your dream team for all time?
Well, I'd love to play again with Seve. That would be nice. Stephen Gerrard, without a doubt. That goes without saying. And the last one's a bit weird. It's Lady Di. I would love to have met Lady Diana Spencer. I just think she looked like she'd be great fun. So she didn't even play golf, so maybe I could have given her a few tips. But I think that would be a very interesting four ball, that.
Yeah, well, yes, that is a unique four ball. The thought of the late Princess of Wales teeing it up. She'd be good fun, though, I reckon.
I think so, yeah.
Cheeky, yeah, which is always important. I used to find that my rounds of golf took so long looking for the bloody thing, but you could make quite good friends. What's your favourite open venue? Any course you've ever played? Answer both, actually. Open venue, yeah. And then favourite golf course.
I think it would have to be both the same. St Andrews. I mean, again, going back to the fact that just the layout itself is so natural, and the double greens, you can have a 100-yard putt on the fifth, and the other hole that it backs onto, that must be the 13th. Just everything about St Andrews, it's a quality golf course. It changes with the weather, obviously. You can, front nine can be easy, back nine, but it just depends how the weather is. So it's always different, and that's why I love it.
Yeah. And going back to the sort of more general sport, you've been to a lot of events, you mentioned England rugby. Is there one event that stands out that's on your bucket list that you've never been to that you'd just like to go to once and say, I went to it?
An England in a World Cup final. That's my ultimate dream. I've often wondered, because when you play, normally the World Cup final is a very similar week to the US Women's Open. So you can never do both, obviously. But that would be my dream, to go and watch, probably at Wembley, if we could ever get the World Cup back over here. See England win the World Cup at Wembley would be the dream come true.
That would be all right, wouldn't it? And have you've met so many, you've talked about it. It's amazing the heroes that and sportsmen and women that you've met. Is there someone that you never did meet that you'd like to have done if you'd had the chance, like alive or dead?
I think there'd be so many. It's hard to think of one just off the bat. I mean, I've never really met or played golf with Tiger Woods. Obviously, to play with Tiger would be something a bit special, but I was lucky enough to play golf with Kenny Dalglish. Again, I named him as one of my sporting heroes, but I think there's so many, the list could go on and on and on, but I'm very, a bit one dimensional. I'm very much football and very much Liverpool. So you can see the general, everything, always goes back to Liverpool players of the past.
So basically you and Thomas Bjorn are the biggest Liverpool fans in golf. That to me.
When I see Thomas, we always have a little chat about Liverpool.
And of the people you've played golf with, it's a bit of a golfy question, this, of all the women that you've played with over the years, is there one player that sticks out that was maybe had the most natural talent that you ever saw, but maybe wasn't able to convert that into tournaments, that they had that kind of just extraordinary ability, but not always? Was there someone you thought, my God, if only they could have been the greatest by miles? Or have there been many like that?
I think there's a few you can think of, but, you know, they're still playing. People like Charlie Hull, I think, as talented as she is, she should win more. Carlotta Sigander is another one who's got absolutely every shot. I love watching her play golf. I always put it down to, would I pay money to see these people play? And, you know, people like Charlie, Carlotta, even Anne Van Dam, who's just come on the scene in the last 2 or 3 years, the way she hits the ball, I'd like to see them progress and go on and become dominant players, because I think they've got the game and they've got that little X factor. They're a little bit different to the others.
And are you seeing, as you watched both European Ladies European Tour and obviously the LPGA, and you've been on both, is the standard improving? Do you think the quality is getting better and better? I've obviously been involved with the game for a bit. It feels like there's just more and more great kids coming through. Would that be fair?
Absolutely spot on, yeah. I mean, I played this week with Nasa Hatioko. She, she's 11 under for 2 days. Her ball striking is incredible. There's nothing of her. She's about 5 foot nothing. And just stands up and stomps on it. And there's so many like that now. Obviously, you've got Lexi Thompson, who's a bigger stature, but they just don't hold back now. They play really good dynamic golf. And Aria Jitonagan, people like that. The standard's through the roof. From the when I played at my best, there was probably 20 players that could probably win. Now there's 120 players that could probably win any given week, because the standard's that high now.
And you must also be delighted to see, one, obviously the last Solheim Cup was pretty exciting, but you must love to see that the Solheim Cup is absolutely the equal of its male cousin, if you like, in terms of what it's doing for the game in general, let alone men and women. But that must be something of great pride for you.
Oh, yeah, it's very important that we're competitive against the Americans. They still hold a series of advantage, but not as big as it used to be. And we've won our fair share over the last sort of decade or so. And I see great things for the European Tour, because the players that are coming through, like I said earlier, they're Van Dams of this world. They're proper golfers. They're ready to come out and play on the LPGA and compete against all the South Koreans. And when it comes to Solheim Cup, they're not scared of the Americans. And maybe years ago, we used to be a little bit, we're the underdogs. Now, I think they step toe to toe and they think, you know, this is an even contest, which is great.
Well, and that to me, as you know, it's something LPGA and HSBC's involvement in women's golf, something I'm very proud to have been part of. And it's just fantastic to see that moving on. But I can genuinely say this, and to spare your blushes, I was lucky enough to play in a lot of pro-ams at HSBC in those days, many of them, and wasn't very good. And I have to say that playing with you was always the most fun, and I genuinely mean that. Some of the guys just took themselves a little bit too seriously, in my view. But there we go. Laura, we now come to the part of the show that I call the Captain's Broadside, which is I ask you a series of really quite weird and random questions, and you just have to answer them. It's quite straightforward. And because you've come on board my ship, the Reef Gauche, and it's a boat, and other than where the winds go, we can sail wherever you want in the world, anywhere. Obviously, it should be near a port. What would be your chosen destination? Where can I drop you off?
Drop me off on the Hamilton Islands in Australia, near the Barrier Reef. I'll go there for a little trip.
Right, so we're speaking to you currently from New Jersey down to Australia. That's going to be probably a good 3-week trip. That's fine. Well, we're very well stocked. This boat does not sail fast through the water because the stores are always full. But I'll get you to work during the 3 or 4 weeks that we have you on board. But for first night, at this beautiful table, I get you to choose the menu. So what would your, and what will your three-course meal be, the Dame Laura Davis three-course meal on the Reef Gauche tonight, that I can get Paul the steward to get cracking in the galley?
Right, let's see. Starter, I think a nice little crayfish cocktail. That'd be nice. Plenty of crayfish
below us, so that's good. Little,
yeah, so we'll have some of that. And then it would have to be a nice ribeye steak, medium, with asparagus and some nice chips. I think that'll do very nicely.
Are we doing thick cut or skinny fries?
No, the little skinny, the stringfellow type ones. Yeah, I like those.
I've got them.
Yeah,
okay,
very
that's
nice.
Easy.
Yep. Maybe some mushrooms as well, a side of mushrooms. That would be nice. Sauteed. And for dessert, there's only one for me, Eton Mess. That would do me very nicely. Yeah, love an Eton Mess.
And a bit of red and white wine to go with that?
Yeah, I think with the steak, I'll have a couple of glasses of red.
This is just my, you know, we've had a few people on the show and you just pretty much named my, I'm going to enjoy having dinner with you tonight. Let's put it this way. But as you know, we've taken your cases to the beautiful ensuite cabin and providing Bruce, the captain's or the ship's dog, hasn't eaten all your stuff. You'll see it comes rather impractically or rather impossibly with a power shower. And given this is the 17th century boat, that seems unlikely, but let's go with it for a little bit longer. Before you come and have dinner, you're going to have a shower. What does Laura Davis sing in the shower?
Well, I'm not sure. I would put Coldplay on and try and sing along to a few Coldplays. That would be my they're my shower songs for sure.
Okay, bit of Chris Martin. I like this.
Yeah, and I love Coldplay.
Do you remember your first ever album that you bought as a young girl?
I remember my first single. It was Tiger Feet by Mudd. That's how long ago that was.
A 45.
At 45, yeah. I used to go singles. I wasn't big into albums so much. It was I liked the singles. Well, Blondie was probably my first ever album, the Heart of Glass one. That was that was probably the first album.
It's funny, isn't it? Or, you know, we're obviously a slightly senior generation. What's amazing is whether it's people, you know, the 60s and the Beatles and the Stones or bands in the 70s like Blondie, is they still resonate now. The kids are still listening.
Yeah.
That same stuff that we did when we grew up, which is, I think it's fantastic. Do you remember your first ever live gig that you went to, concert?
Yeah, never went to a lot, but I was lucky enough to go to Michael Jackson, the Dangerous Tour, when he was touring around Europe. And we went, we were playing in Germany and he was live there. So we got to that one. And then we met up with all their drivers, funnily enough, and they were in the same hotel as us. And they gave us tickets 3 weeks later for the Munich gig. So we got twice to go on the Dangerous Tour, which was incredible. I know everything about Michael Jackson.
Was it astonishing?
It was extraordinary. Absolutely. Even it was the one with the backpack, you know, where he took off and everything at the end of it. It was just the whole thing. It was, for me, it was the best show I've ever been to. And like I said, I know it's all got a bit wrong for Michael since then, but at the time he was the man, and it was amazing.
Must have been him and Queen, I think, are two bands people talk about the experience. And you must remember your first car.
Triumph Herald Estate. It was light powder blue. A member of my golf club at West Byfleet, a lovely lady, she sold it to me for £100.
And how long did you have it for?
I had it for about 6 months until some silly woman pulled out in front of me and I wrote it off for T-boned a junction. Totally not my fault, but it was the end of the poor little car.
But I bet it was one of your favourite cars you've ever had.
Well, I went on to buy another Triumph Herald and completely restored it when I had a bit of money to do something like that. And I bought a red convertible that was an absolute rust bucket, but turned it into a really lovely car that I had for a good few years. So that was nice.
And do you have, are you like Henman? Are you like one of these ridiculous people that you play golf, you play golf, he plays tennis, but are you a sort of absurdly talented sports person that can turn your hand? Do you play a mean game of cricket or tennis? Or are you just, or like Tommy Fleetwood, who is very funny, he just said, I can just do golf. That's all I do. What? Who are you?
I'm pretty much an all-rounder. I play every sport to a decent level. The only sport I've never been able to play to a good level was squash. That court, just claustrophobic. I like a bit of room when I play my sport. And yeah, squash is not my sport, but I play tennis and darts, table tennis, hockey, anything that's going. I mean, not so much now, obviously getting on a bit, but certainly in my younger days to probably when I was in my mid-40s, played a lot of other sports and just really loved them. Football as well, obviously.
Okay, so you've hoisted golf trophies. That is something that is a completely impossible notion for me. But if you could have one other sport to hoist a trophy at, just where it was you playing and you were the hero and it was that moment, either in a team or individual sport, what would it be?
I think scoring the winning goal for England women's team in the World Cup final, that would be, because I football, women's football wasn't big when I was growing up, unfortunately, because I probably would have got into it quite a lot when I was younger. But it wasn't really about. So I just love watching these girls play now. They're so good. And to be involved in an England World Cup team would be great.
Well, we can but wish. And my final question of the broadside round is, if this is a pirate ship, as you can see from the surroundings and the rather motley crew that I have around you. If we can smuggle something on board for you to take us down to the Hamilton Islands, because this is a pirate ship and that's what we do, do you have a treasured possession? I mean, inanimate, something that over the years that you take with you, we can put in the treasure chest, take down, bury it safely and keep forever. Is there something, or are you not sentimental in that way?
No, there's one thing. It's a similar question. It's like, what would you grab out of your house if your house was on fire, apart from animals and family members? And it's the very first Solheim Cup in 1990. We were given a replica of the actual Solheim Cup. It's about probably a third the size of the actual one. And there were only, I think there were 8 per team. So there are only 16 or maybe 18 of them made. And it's my prized possession. So I would bring along my Solheim Cup replica.
Wonderful. Well, we will pop it in the chest and we will look after it very well. How lovely. Laura, as always, I feel I could talk to you forever, particularly when we could get into proper sport chat. But you probably have to go and get ready for tournaments and all of those things. One, you've been a wonderful guest, and it's such an honour and privilege for me to have you on board the Reef Ghost. So thank you for doing it. And as mentioned, because this is the classy pirate ship that it is, and we do things differently, I want to make sure you will leave with our own special type of treasure. It's not a Solheim Cup replica, but it's a bottle of the 12-year-old single malt whiskey from our friends at Loch Lomond, which you have with our great gratitude for coming on board.
Thank you very much, Skipper.
Well, I now need to get to the cabin, go and sing your song in the shower, get ready for dinner. We've got ribeye to eat. So look forward to seeing you a little bit later. Dame Laura Davis.
Thank you very much.
So there we have it. Dame Laura Davis, a proper sports fan. Brilliant company to have on board. And I think that was the best epic, most epic dinner selection we've had of all. We don't want you to leave empty-handed before we go. So please head over to @LochLomondMalts to see how our brilliant sponsor can entice you to one of their fabulous bottles of single malt whiskey. They've got a competition. Just go there, find out what's going on. The next time we meet, we're going to turn our attention to the world of cricket, and we're joined on the Reef Ghost by former England cricket captain Michael Vaughan. Can't wait for that show. So until then, keep your mizzenmast trim, your gun deck clear, and be careful getting in and out of the crow's nest. Don't slip. Bye-bye.